Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
Welcome to festive programming from the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands.
Media Network Christmas Special, produced by Jonathan Marks. Flashback, 1982.
And in this special edition, we'll examine in detail one of the mysteries of this past year on the bands. But first, let's see how many of these media stories of 82 you remember.
From way down yonder in New Orleans, on the Mississippi Delta, the sound of the calliope aboard the steamboat Natchez tells you that you're listening to the rock of the world, WRNO, worldwide.
Radio Liberty is usually covered by white noise jamming. In other words, a complete mush of noise containing most frequencies of the audio
signal. RTHK, Radio Television Hong Kong, our organization, has given up shortwave transmission since 1968 because we only broadcast on AM and FM to our own areas. But every 2 years, when the South China Sea race is on, we have to use shortwave to give them...
This is the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Station, broadcasting on frequencies of 536 and 2370 kilohertz. Good evening.
This is London calling the Falkland Islands on 12.04 and 9.915 megahertz. Hello, Mary White back with you again with a special edition of Calling the Falklands. With me is my colleague Mike.
Aquí RAE, Radiodifusión Argentina al Exterior.
Hello, friends. This is RAE, the overseas service of the Argentine National Radio.
Qui RAE, Radiodifusión Argentina al Exterior.
This is the national program and shortwave service of Radio New Zealand.
En onda media, aquí Radio Martí, en 1040 kilohercios, la voz de una Cuba independiente.
Well, that, of course, is a projection into the future, since plans for a government station from the United States broadcasting to Cuba haven't yet been put into reality.
This is FEBA Seychelles.
This week's political troubles in the Seychelles are not the only problems.
This is Radio Deutsche Welle, transmitter Malta.
Right, give yourself a point if you recognise the start of WRNO Worldwide in the USA back in January, our report on jamming in March, Hong Kong's brief shortwave appearance, also in March, the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Station in the news on April the 2nd, BBC's Calling the Falklands programme, RAE, Argentina's reply, Miss Liberty, the distorted shortwave voice to the British Task Force, the March of the Malvinas, Radio New Zealand's threatened shortwave closure, news on Radio Marti, of course, FEBA's troubles in the Seychelles back in August, and, of course, the temporary closure of Deutsche Welle's Malta relay base. Just some of the sounds there of 1982. Now, the voice of Liberty there was quite a mystery, and despite inquiries both here and in Argentina, we haven't been able to persuade anyone to own up to being Miss Liberty. However, Radio Atlántico del Sur, the station the British Ministry of Defence decided should be born on Ascension Day, that was May the 19th, via the BBC Ascension Island relay base, is now less of a puzzle. Remember this.
Nueve 71, Radio Atlántico del Sur.
Part of one of the early transmissions on May the 20th of this year. But what was the purpose of the station? We approached the Ministry of Defence in London, who supplied us with these answers.
Well, to reduce the will to resist of the Argentine forces on the Falkland Islands by making them aware of events in the South Atlantic and of world news and opinion on the crisis, free of the censorship imposed by the Argentine government. There were, of course, other broadcasts reaching the Falkland Islands, including the BBC External Services, but these were aimed at a rather different and wider market than the average Argentine conscript, and Her Majesty's government considered, therefore, that there was a gap to be filled.
But couldn't the programmes you produced have been made by the BBC itself?
Clearly the BBC would have had the expertise to do it, but in view of the very specific nature of the task and the importance of ensuring that there was no suggestion of any interference with the corporation's editorial independence, it was considered appropriate that Her Majesty's government should run the station.
But why was the frequency of 9710 kHz chosen in the 31-metre band? Was this deliberate or accidental?
The frequency chosen was close to that of an Argentine station, and as a further protection to the BBC's reputation for independence, was not one used by the corporation.
But at one time you announced an address in London for correspondence. Did this provide you with evidence that you were being heard?
Yes, many letters were received from a number of different countries, including Argentina.
And what about the jamming by the Argentinians?
Well, there were regular, though largely unsuccessful, attempts to jam RADS broadcasts.
Well, was the station used to broadcast messages when the Argentinians surrendered?
RADS continued for only a day following the surrender by General Menendez of all Argentine troops on the Falkland Islands. The transmitter was then handed back to the BBC on the 16th of June.
Well, some of the US media criticised the announcers used as having Cuban accents. Other reports say they were British. Were, in fact, Argentinians used for the transmissions?
Well, it's interesting to note the many differing descriptions of the announcers' accents, ranging from Castilian through to authentic Latin American. The need for the announcers to speak in Spanish that Argentine conscripts would readily identify with was well understood, and the announcers were selected with this in mind. However, we are not prepared for details of the announcers' identities to be revealed.
But was there deliberate use of music titles in the programme?
It was considered that playing plenty of popular music was the most likely way of appealing to the relatively unsophisticated target audience. It was only in this sense that the use of music was deliberate.
Well, finally, was the BBC involved in any way in the operation?
No. Although the corporation was directed by the government to release the transmitter on Ascension Island, they took no part in the production, presentation or broadcasting of RADS programmes.
Those official answers were read in the studio, of course. Well, joining me now is Alfonso Montalegre, born in Colombia, I should mention, because we'll take a look now at some of the voices behind Radio Atlántico del Sur. Let's pick out the first one from the May 20th broadcast.
Este último navío, el Hermes, ha sido objeto de considerable especulación en la prensa argentina. en la cual se ha declarado repetidamente...
Well, that's one of the voices that was used. Is it Argentinian?
Well, certainly not. Well, Spanish is not his native language. It's very funny to hear. I can impossible tell you where he was born or where which nationality he has, but he speaks Spanish, trying to sound Argentinian and pronouncing like a Spaniard. So I don't know how he's pronouncing the, for instance, the letter C like Spanish does, but he's not a Spanish speaking person.
Okay, let's try the next one.
Bueno, muchas gracias por ese disco a todos los ingenieros técnicos del otro lado en la zona de control. Y yo tengo unas disculpas, dije el disco se llamaba El Agua.
Ah, that's another one.
Well, this guy, I will dare to say he's Cuban, I'm not sure. But he sounds, anyway, from the Caribbean. He could be from Cuba, from Dominican Republic, from Puerto Rico.
How can you tell?
Well, it's very difficult to tell. It's like when you know the accent from New York or from London, and you recognize it every time. Well, what I notice until now is that no one who's speaking here is speaking in the normal way they used to do. They are forcing their voices. They are trying to sound different. I don't know why.
This is the news.
Las noticias.
El primer ministro británico ha dejado a los miembros del Parlamento en sin duda alguna que una solución militar es la única opción que le queda en la crisis de las Islas Malvinas. El gobierno británico ha dado a conocer un documento demostrando las esfuerzas que han hecho para encontrar...
Well, this guy could be Latin American who has lived for many years outside, but I think he could be a British one who speaks very good Spanish, but there is something in the accent, it sounds very funny anyway.
¿Qué quieren decir los números 408 en tu mente?
En mi mente los 408 son el número de elefantes en el Parque Zoológico de Buenos Aires.
No, claro que no. No, es sobre la casilla de correo, ¿te acuerdas?
Ah, sí, la casilla de correo, 408. Si quieren ustedes mandar una dedicación a cualquier gente, nos manden a nosotros aquí, a Francisco y a José Miguel, una dedicación. Y recuérdense, la dirección es... Casilla de correo 408, iniciales GPO, Londres, Inglaterra, por supuesto.
They're giving an address there, aren't they?
Yes, they're giving an address. It sounds for me very funny. It's like a salad niçoise, everything mixed up. They still sound to me, these two guys, very Caribbean accent. They have a Caribbean accent. It could be Cubans, but they speak... like Argentinians, it sounds very funny. Well, anyway, if I would be Argentinian, I would laugh about that.
What about this particular voice, then?
Según las fuentes informativas, el detenido, Dr. Haines, anteriormente jefe de sanidad en las islas, está
acompañado... He's Latin American. I don't think he comes from South America. Anyway, not from South America. He could be from the North. I don't know, I was thinking about those two guys, the first one which I thought they were Cubans. They could be also from the Antilles, from the Dutch Antilles. They speak Papiamento, it's a mixture of English with Spanish, Portuguese, and some other languages. It sounds very funny. And they could be also from there, I don't know, I'm not sure.
Right, we got one more male voice.
...de entre 30 a 65%, y la inflación alrededor de un 130%.
Anything clear about that?
Well, yes, it's clear that he comes from Latin America. He has a slight Chilean accent from Chile. I think he's Chilean. I'm almost sure.
Right, and finally we come to the female voice that we heard on the air with a spot they called sentimental pause, I suppose.
Y aquí, la pausa sentimental, con la señorita Mariana Flores.
Estas próximas estrofas de poesía les quiero mandar al subteniente Juan Esteban Olmedo Sigorraga. Este trozo viene de Lorca y se llama Paso. Virgen, con su meriñaque, virgen de la soledad, abierta como un inmenso.
What are you doing, first of all?
Sentimental pause. I mean, I will cry with this. It's such an awful stereotype, old-fashioned stereotype from Latin America. I don't think you can find this nowadays, maybe in small villages, but this is very bad taste. Well, the voices, she could be Latin American, but she has been living many, many years abroad. She could be also from Chile, I think, or from the Argentinian West region, from the Andes, next to Chile. She could be from there, I don't know, I'm not sure. But
what's she doing?
Well, she was reading an awful poem, a bad taste, I think, about a virgin coming from the mountains to, along the streets and going into the sea. I don't know what she meant by that. It has nothing to do with the war, yes, of course not. Well, the whole transmission that I have listened until now, it has nothing to do. It's very...
Yeah, but, okay, if you say, right, you know, you have a particular situation where you want to get through to the other side, the enemy voice, then...
If I would be a soldier and I would be in the Malvinas, then I will be laughing. It will be nice to hear that, because anyway it will comfort me. I will have a good time listening to it. But they will never convince me with that, because the accents are not Argentinian. They sound very funny. They are talking nonsense and very old records and bad taste poetry and, well, stupid. Anyway.
But according to the statement from the Ministry of Defence, they said that they needed to play plenty of pop music, which was likely to appeal to the relatively unsophisticated target audience.
Well, I don't know why they say it like that. It's like transmitting to the British soldiers all Berlin records and things like that.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Oh, it's visited off for goodness sake.
Well, I'm afraid it is true that we do have to announce today that this is the last programme in which Wim van Amstel will be taking part in, at least under the banner of Radio Netherlands.
Yes, it is true that I will be leaving this organisation, Radio Netherlands, but not the field of shortwave broadcasting, at least not entirely, because in my new function I will be coordinating the use of radio frequency in the Netherlands for the Dutch PTT, and a part of my activities will also concern the shortwave spectrum, of course.
Right, well, perhaps you can take a look back then on some of your work in shortwave and tell us what you think the future of it is, because I know you have specific views on that.
Yes, well, as far as I can see, there are two major problems to be solved if this medium of shortwave broadcasting wants to play a role for much longer. First, there is the problem of jamming, the deliberate interference of broadcasts by transmissions who have no other goal than to make the reception of broadcast in a certain area impossible.
Right, so is there a solution to this particular problem?
No, it will be clear that there is no effective technical solution to overcome the adverse effect of these jamming transmissions. So a real solution, which would mean that all jamming transmissions are terminated, will have to be negotiated on a political level. And I want to make it clear that I am not pointing an accusing finger to any administration who is responsible for this phenomenon, because there is a long and complex history attached to it. It would be an oversimplification to say that a particular country was to blame. So what I would like to see, that in an atmosphere of détente, the parties concerned would come together and put these spectrum-spoiling activities to an absolute stop. But that may be wishful thinking, of course, with the present state of world politics.
Indeed, I agree with that. But indeed, unless it does happen, things are looking pretty serious. There's another problem too, isn't
yes,
there?
Yes, the second problem, of course, is the congestion of the shortwave broadcasting bands and the resulting power race. It will not be a secret to the interested shortwave listener that only few stations are really successful in establishing a good service in a certain target area. The problem is that too many stations are trying to do the same thing at the same time, and the allocated frequency space is not sufficient to provide each of them with a clear channel. The result is that more stations use a particular channel simultaneously, and in order to be heard, have to raise their power. Despite all this, when you tune over a band in the local evening hours, it is disappointing to notice how few stations have a signal clear enough for you to appreciate the programs. And the situation is rapidly getting worse.
Well, as far as the second problem is concerned, I'm sure regular listeners to Media Network will have heard you make that particular statement before, but what are you going to do about it?
Well, solutions can and I think have to be found in both a technical and organizational way. Both will require an international willingness to cooperate in achieving such solutions as to use more efficient modulation methods as single sideband, for example. The use of better, more directional antenna system with fewer side lobes. Exchange of transmitting sites so that the audience can be reached in the most effective way, preferably via one-hop transmission path, extended use of relay facilities, and last but not least, the introduction on a large scale of cheap but nevertheless high-quality receivers.
Well, in 1982, we've seen a number of stations doing swaps, program swaps, for example, WYFR in Taiwan, Radio Australia and the BBC. Is this sort of thing going to continue?
Yes, and I certainly hope it will continue, because what is the use of using a medium that is overloaded like the shortwave spectrum is, and try to establish long transmission paths when you know for sure that you can't on several occasions? Then I vote for a short path, a one-hop transmission, which has the advantage that you have a very high signal strength in the target area and that you can operate most of the time on the low-frequency bands, which are present on most also very simple shortwave receivers.
But most of the programs that go out on shortwave do indeed have some sort of political content. Now, do you think countries are close enough to actually think about doing this?
Well, certainly not all countries and certainly not now. But there are nowadays already a number of countries who are basically of the same political opinion and who could easily cooperate by interchanging transmitting sites.
Well, Vim, just before you pack your suitcase, let me ask you finally if you've noticed any mysterious events in 1982.
Mm-hmm. We have given attention to a number of mysterious events that took place in or outside the shortwave spectrum in this program, Media Network, of which we were not able to find answers or explanations yet. Also, and this was still in the time of the ex-jukebox, the predecessor of Media Network, we devoted quite some attention and asked the help of our listeners to take part in the observation of a large hole in the ionosphere as a result of the launching of a very big rocket. This was back in September 1979, and I see now how time flies and how fast it goes, when a big Atlas Centaur rocket was launched from Cape Canaveral in the United States. When a rocket of such dimensions goes through the ionized layers while burning enormous amounts of fuel and producing tons and tons of exhaust gases, the ions will easily recombine to molecules, resulting in a huge unionized trail in the layers.
In other words, you're punching a huge hole in the ionosphere.
Right. We were interested whether this would affect propagation of signals to and from certain target areas. But at the time of the launching, there was also a huge solar flare, which disturbed shortwave propagation so severely that the results of all observations we received could not be taken into account seriously. And that messed up a very nice try. That is why we could never come up with a result of these tests. Nevertheless, we would like to have the opportunity to do this again whenever the possibility arises.
Okay, one more.
Yes, another story worthwhile to follow and to follow up is the study on how big the effect of jamming transmissions is on the total occupancy of the shortwave bands. We mentioned the results of studies about this subject back in April, and these were varying. It seemed that at times no less than 90% of the worst affected bands suffered interference from jamming transmitters. It would be worthwhile to continue the interest in these types of studies to see whether there are any improvements or even deteriorations in the situation.
Perhaps something that shortwave listener clubs could get involved in, monitoring jamming.
Definitely. I have been asked the question a number of times in what way the Sirius DXer could assist the shortwave broadcasting stations, and this would certainly be a method to be of real assistance.
So not so much looking for clear frequencies, but looking for jammed frequencies.
Well, to to find out what the percentage in their specific area is of the channels that are really disturbed by jamming transmitters. I would certainly be interested to know about it. So if you ever get a letter on this subject after I left this organization, I would appreciate if you passed it on to me.
Well, finally, Wim, you've watched three DX editors working in English here, Dick Speakman, Fritz Geveling, and myself. Are you sorry to be leaving?
Well, as a matter of fact, I am, to some extent, because over the past few years I was fortunate enough to work in a field which happens to be also a hobby of mine. I have met a large number of great people and made a lot of good friends. I'm looking forward to start my next function, of course, but feel sorry at the same time to leave so many interesting people and not to forget a lot of interesting work behind. Since I will not be able to write to everybody personally without a risk to forget one or more, I gladly take this opportunity to say a big hello to all my friends out there. And this is hopefully not a farewell to many, but a goodbye to most.
Well, our sincere very best wishes to Wim van Amstel. And now let's see what our reporter in Sri Lanka, Victor Gunatilaka, has got in the way of Christmas listening tips.
Well, Jonathan, no Christmas surprises yet, but you never know what Santa Claus will bring in on Christmas Day. Well, on Christmas Day itself, Queen Elizabeth will give her customary Christmas message on the BBC World Service at 09:30 and 15 hours UTC on all usual BBC frequencies. On Vatican Radio, the Pope's blessings will come over at 15 hours UTC on two frequencies, 15110 and 11810 kHz, and again at 02 hours on 9605 and 11965 kHz. In addition, there will be a host of other programs for Christmas on many stations on your radio dial. The Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, in its All Asia service, has many interesting Christmas specials on Christmas Day from 00:30 to 04:30 and 12:30 to 16 hours on two frequencies, 9720 kHz and 15425 kHz. Those two frequencies, 9720 and 15425. On Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, most stations extend their service well past midnight to bring church services and also the New Year revelry. I'll be hoping that Port Vila in Vanuatu will extend transmissions beyond their 1100 sign-off to give me a chance at it. They use their transmissions on two frequencies, 3945 and 7260. That's Port Vila in Vanuatu with probably some extended transmissions. Radio Veritas Asia is a unique broadcaster because it is the voice of Asia and not only just the Philippines. Their programs project all Asian countries, their music, culture, and people in their English language transmissions. These transmissions were changed in November, so look out for them at midnight GMT on 15195 and 15280, and again 14:30 to 15 hours UTC, 14:30 to 15 hours on 11955 and 15215.
Thanks, Victor. And now we cross to Arthur Cushion in Invercargill, New Zealand, for a late news item concerning a new station.
KYOI Saipan, initial test December 17 on 11900 kHz. On December 18, the first music test at 0635 on 15190 and at 0700 moved to 11900 kHz.
This is a test of radio station KYOI Saipan on 11.900 MHz.
That's a typical announcement, Jonathan. I hope this early advice of KYOI being on the air is of help to you and listeners to Media Network.
Well, thanks, Arthur, for that late news, which brings us to the end of this edition of the programme. So, if you're celebrating, have a very merry and peaceful Christmas. And on behalf of today's contributors, this is Jonathan Mark saying...
Meet again, don't know where, don't know where.
Now please switch that off.